Welcome. My name is Elizabeth Trainer. I am the communications lead for employee communications and engagement at Converse, and I also sit on the board of the Women of Converse Network. Today, we have 60 members of that network, along with our male allies, present in force at the conference. If you want to find any of us, just look for our sneakers. We are thrilled to be here to support the advancement of women leaders from across the country today. At Converse, moving the needle toward gender equality is something that we feel very passionately about. The Converse Chuck Taylor is the epitome of a blank canvas for self-expression. And recently, we used that blank canvas for our Love the Progress campaign, which worked to redefine the definition of the word girl that was defined archaically in dictionaries around the world. So please find our booth on the exhibition hall to find out more about that incredible campaign. The conferences for women are a natural partner for Converse. They offer tools and inspiration to support you as you make your mark in your communities. The Women of Converse is geared toward empowering, inspiring, and connecting all members of the Converse community, and today that includes you. Thank you for participating in this breakout session, Networking, Become a Self-Promotion Pioneer. I am so excited to introduce our workshop leader, Karen Wickrey. Give her some applause. Called the best connected Silicon Valley figure you've never heard of. That came from her bio, I didn't make that up. Karen has worked for 30 years in technology businesses as a writer, editor, and communication pro. Her resume includes long stints at Google and Twitter, and her true passion is for connecting people. She's written for Wired, Medium, and authored her own book called Taking the Work Out of Networking on building an authentic network. I look forward to hearing her insights today, so please join me in welcoming Karen.
Thank you so much. What a great room. And I'm happy to be here and excited to introduce the panelists in a moment. So just to give you a little flavor of what this is about and maybe why you're here, the workshop description says self-promotion is a critical aspect of networking in 2019. I'm going to quibble with that a little bit and say self-awareness is a critical aspect of networking all the time, not just this year. By which I mean it's good to understand how you relate to people and how they relate to you and pay attention to those you like and would get to know and have some connection with as opposed to everybody you're supposed to meet. Right, because you don't have to meet everybody. Think about people who you come across who even in a brief moment make you curious, intrigued, excited, happy, pleased. Those are the people that you want to make connections with. And if you don't feel that way, move on. We all hate networking, the idea of networking, because people think everybody else has the answer, the solution for themselves. I'm the only one who doesn't. And I'm in need, and maybe the clock is ticking because I have to find a new job right away. My new boss is awful. I'm being downsized. Another reorg is happening, whatever it is. And so you feel like, I got to go out there and network. And that's a particularly vulnerable time to think about doing this. So, and the other thing is networking is often viewed as a hotel ballroom or a big conference room where people are essentially speed dating with business cards. It feels very phony and transactional. No wonder we hate it, right? So I'm going to tell you that making connections with people is an important skill for life, and you have to do it in your own style in order to make it feel good for you. Because we're all going to need information, guidance, connections, new ideas from people we don't know well or don't know at all. And this is why it's an ongoing process. I would also say the idea of continuing to make connections over time is important because we're all going to have more jobs than ever. The idea of one or two jobs a career is long past. We're going to move geographically, we're going to change fields, and we're all going to work longer. I'm living proof. So there's a better way to continue making and keeping connections over time who count. Listen to this great line I found when I was writing my book. Networking is less like hunting and more like farming. That's from a guy named Ivan Meisner, who created a business networking organization. But substitute gardening, right? Networking is less like hunting and more like gardening. And then think about meeting people, seeking them out, coming back to them, just as you would with a garden. You're watering, you're weeding, you're trimming back, you're replanting, you're planting new plants, you're wintering over in some cases. It's ongoing work, right? But it's not constant, doesn't take all your time. It's cultivation. And that is what the long view, the long game of making connections really is about. And thinking about more broadly the people you know, you all have a bigger network than you think you do because of people you've worked with, gone to school with, been on boards with, volunteered with, been neighbors with. These can all be part of your web of connections. And they're there to tap as you will want to help each of them when you need some specific information about a company or a job, when you're gathering intel more broadly about living abroad, about another line of work, a graduate program, when you aspire to meet a specific person, when someone introduces you to someone they think you'd like. And my answer to that is just say yes. Take that introduction. Sometimes a random connection turns out to be a wonderful one. And most important, perhaps, if you're on a job, your colleagues at your current job that you don't work with regularly are important conduits and contacts for you over time and can become a really key part of your network of connections. So it's a continuous cycle of making connections that count, and I think it's a virtuous one when you do it on your terms and in your own time. I would also say the subtitle to the hardback of my book was An Introvert's Guide to Making Connections That Count, and that's because I am well connected to a wonderful virtual web of people around the world, but it's not because I'm in the ballrooms, and it's not because I'm out trading business cards or scheduling my time with meetups. It's because I keep in touch with people online. I pay attention to when they have job changes, when they are moving, when they're on vacation and they're posting pictures from that. And so I have kind of touch points with lots of people. That keeps us all top of mind, and that's a very easy habit to develop in order to stay in touch and then not be so afraid when you need to ask someone for advice or a favor. And they'll do it to you. It's a real give and get kind of situation. So, in brief, the keys to making great connections: be curious and open to opportunities to meet other people, but you don't have to meet them all in a big room. It's all about one-to-one. Each meeting should be one-to-one, each connection. If you meet people here, it's all about the follow-up that you're going to do later, whether it's a coffee date or an email exchange or a phone call. So networking is not done in the moment, and you're not kind of one and done with it then. That's the start. Keeping in loose touch, as I was just talking about, where you have your channels of communication with people you know. Somebody's sports team won or lost, and you just see that news and send them a note. Someone's company's in the news, and you say, hey, just thought of you when I saw this. How are you? Things that don't require a meeting or an exchange, but do just bring you into mind for a moment in a very positive way. And it's, by the way, never been easier to keep in touch with literally thousands of people through all of the networks that we now use. So I think of this all as a sort of give and get, pay it forward kind of enterprise that I think is enriching, and you feel less alone and more connected to more people simply by being able to keep up these virtual contacts, which have a real dimension as well, that you can turn to and who have your back whenever you need to call on them. So those are my brief remarks. Let me now move to introducing our wonderful panel and put some questions to them. Okay. So going down, let's start at the far end with Susan Ritano Davy. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Let me go.
She was trying to break up the black.
Yeah. Trying to break up all the black on stage. I will go down to Kate Reed and start, who is the VP for IBM Security Performance Marketing Group. And she's going to talk about her experiences around self-promotion as a corporate executive who has climbed the ranks and talk about how it's helped her career path. And by the way, of course, there are full bios of each of the panelists, and I encourage you to look them up. So, Kate, when do you think self-promotion is the most productive?
I think it's the most productive when people come prepared. So I work for IBM. There's 400,000 people there. There are a lot of people that want my time. There are a lot of people that I want their time. And a lot of people come in. It's very obvious, you know, oh, I'm here because my manager thought you would be good to talk to. They haven't done their homework. They're not prepared. They don't have a point of view. And likewise, I have to do that as well, right? When I have a skip-level interview and I meet with someone, I go in with doing my research, being prepared, building my brand. And that way it doesn't come off as self-promotion, right? You want the person you're meeting with to walk away with an impression of you and not walk away with, wow, that was 30 minutes I could have been doing email or in another meeting. So I think it works best when you mutually get something out of it. And so I would recommend everybody does that, right? Builds their brand, does their homework, has a point of view, brings something to the table so you're not promoting yourself.
Has your view of self-promotion changed over the course of your career?
Yeah, I think that before I felt, I've had experiences where I felt like it was braggy, right? Like I was walking in and I was telling people, oh, look what I can do. And what I've realized is it's pretty vital to do. So as I interview for roles, I've had examples where I've kind of talked myself out of getting the role, right? I had an interview with our general manager within the security division a few years ago, and I went in and I heard the stat once that, you know, a man can't do 75% of what's on the resume, but he'll go in and nail that interview. And a woman can do 95%, and she focuses on that 5% that she can't do. And I was doing that in the interview. I don't know anything about security marketing. I don't know how to run digital. And he stopped me dead in my tracks and said, start telling me what you can do, right? And it was such a big moment for me, and it's something I still work on. Thankfully, I turned it to what I could bring to the table, and I got the role. But I think you start to see that, right? And I, by the way, have recently done this as well. I recently got a new job, and when I was interviewing for the job just a few weeks ago, at the end, the person I was interviewing with said to me, Kate, you're very self-deprecating, and that's great. But a lot of people are going to think that's a lack of confidence. And it's true. And I knew I could do this role. I know I can do the role. But again, I focused on, well, I've never done this, right? So I think it's changed in that I don't see it as boastful. I think it is necessary in building a brand.
Yeah. Thank you for that. So you may have hinted at this already. What do you think makes us most uncomfortable with self-promotion?
I think it come off boastful. I think there's a time and a place for it. So my husband and I had some of our friends over last week for a holiday party. One of those people is in the audience. The story is not about you. And I got trapped in the corner with someone just telling me how wonderful he was and, you know, how important his job was. And I presented in front of 2,000 people. And it wasn't the time or the place to have this conversation. You know, here, if someone came up, I wouldn't suggest you come in and say I'm wonderful, but if you came up and we had a conversation, it's the appropriate place to have that discussion. So I think it's really about striking a balance of when it's appropriate, when it's not, and tuning your message to that audience, right?
Thank you. Thank you for that. I want to turn now to Susan, our green dress, our dark green dress up here. Susan Ritano-Davey is co-founder and owner of Prepare to Launch and has just launched Prepare to Launch You, which is available online. The company provides guidance to women on their journeys back to work after opting out for family. Again, much more in the program bio. Susan, what do you think unique challenges are that women face who have taken career breaks in beginning to promote themselves for a career return, and what do you advise them?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that even familiarizing them with the language of brand. So if you've taken a career break, I mean, so women who take our courses are either early career, they're navigating maternity leave and that stuff, or they're mid-career and they're navigating work and life, and then their later career, they've taken time off and they're going back. That particular, all of those demographics struggle with confidence, with striking that balance that Kate talked about. But women who've taken a career break have the extra challenge of this now crisis of confidence. Because face it, even if you take a year off or two, even if you take a maternity leave, coming back, you feel like you've missed out and you're not quite there. So extend that if you've taken a career break in a number of years. So the first thing is just recognizing that they even have a brand. And what is that? It's basically knowing who you are and what you bring to the table. It's also knowing who you aren't. And unfortunately, often, as your example presented, we are focused a lot more on who we aren't than who we are. And then also making them understand and really embrace the fact that they are not the same person they were. So if you came out of school and you went into accounting and you worked for 12 years and then you stayed home for 5 years to have your kids, you are not just the accountant you were 5 years ago. During those years that you're out, you are still building a brand and you have evolved. And so a lot of it is giving women permission to account for and value those years that they've been home. Because truly, unless you've been sitting around watching Netflix all day, you're doing something. And especially if you were an ambitious woman. So, right, if we're moms, after having had a big career, we're taking all that energy and we're running everything. So a couple of examples. I've had clients who say, well, I really haven't done anything. I really didn't volunteer. But then I talk to them and find out that they have flipped 3 homes and they've been the general contractor and they've hired the workforce and they've made all of the strategic decisions and they've made the purchasing of materials. That is tangible, what I call work currency. Those are valuable parts of your brand. If you were a volunteer and you ran the PTO and you ran large events and you did fundraising and maybe you were a treasurer and you did the finances and you submitted the 501c3 paperwork and you used QuickBooks, these are all part of your brand. So I think the essence of the answer to the question is recognizing that they have a brand and then helping them own it and develop language around it. Because the brand's great, but if the story you tell isn't good, then it doesn't really matter, right? You've got to know the brand, understand who you are, what you offer, and tell it in a compelling way and in a confident way.
I'm just looking. I'm just looking at a follow-on question where you start to talk about this, I think, a little bit. You caution against when you're taking your time out for understandable reasons, you're all in with family life, but that may include, you know, stopping with LinkedIn or any social media or any kind of other sort of professional communication. Mm-hmm. But you advise against this. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, all right. So my favorite course that I teach is not something that we've produced digitally, but it's How Not to Ever Need Our Course, which is all the things that you can do if you are going to opt out, and the earlier you start thinking about this, the better. So let's take the example of I'm taking a, what's the standard maternity leave now? 4 months is the legal.
Three to six.
I mean, I know some companies offer 6 months paid. So it's really essential right before you take that break to focus on your brand and to really promote yourself. So let's take the example of somebody who's going to be taking a family leave. So you know you're going to be out for 4 months, say. That's the time during which you should be really reminding everybody in your workplace how great you are. Because you're going to be gone. And A, you want to make sure that your work is done well so that you're not returning to a big fire that you've got to put out. And B, let's face it, selfishly, you want to make sure that they miss you, that they recognize how good you are before you leave. And the piece that you're mentioning there, Karen, is keeping those lines of communication open. So using the example of family leave, And that can happen anywhere in your career. And let me tell you something. We will all take a family leave if we're working for a certain amount of period of time, because we're working, as you said, longer. So we're going to either be dealing with aging parents at one end, or children, or siblings, or sometimes both, and sometimes all three at once. So family leave is just is going to be a necessity for all of us. So when you're taking that leave, it would be perfectly legal and maybe even fully understandable for you to take a complete make a complete disconnect from the office. And you may feel like that's what you want to do. And I have four children, so I felt like I wanted to do that too. But I know from having made this mistake the first time that you need to have some type of engagement. So what we recommend in our course is that you have a weekly schedule. You're in control. We're going to talk every Thursday at this time. And this does a couple of things. Number one, it keeps them remembering who you are. Now, are they going to forget you? Probably not. But you're going to have this nagging insecurity that, oh my God, they're going to forget who I am. So this helps you keep that connection. It also keeps you present of mind and present in their mind. It allows you to have some input. So there might be a product launch going on, and you might want to offer a suggestion. It also prepares, or actually gives the people that are covering for you, that access that they need. There's so much that you know. You could put the best work coverage plan in place possible, but there's stuff up here that you're not going to write down. And so knowing that they're going to have this brief access with you every week just puts them at ease. So it prepares them for your leave. It gives you both some interaction during that leave. And then when you come back, now you're not coming back realizing there's a new manager who you'd never met, because you've been talking to them every week and you know they're there. So it's part self-preservation and it's part really supporting your team. And all through all of that, that open communication and always reminding your people through your actions, through your accomplishments, and through your storytelling what your brand is and why you're valuable.
That's great. And what about, let's talk a minute about when the woman is returning to work. Do you have a story about that coming back into an interview or negotiating process?
Yes. Yeah, so if you work for Mass Financial Services, I think you heard this story this morning. And this actually, Karen, would be even for women who are currently working. I see this all the time. So I had a corporate career, I had a consulting career, and now I've started this company. So I've got kind of a 360-degree perspective. I've done a ton of interviewing. And I notice even for women in the prime of their game, kind of to what you said earlier, they don't tell the story with the same bold, compelling language that men do. And I hate making generalizations, but I'm in my mid-50s, I have seen it all, and it always plays out this way. So in this particular case, I was working for my last company. It was a flexible work consulting company, and I had a man come and interview with me, and this was probably 15 years ago. He'd been laid off during a big layoff at Aetna, which is a big insurance company. And he told this great story about this project. He was a senior project manager, great project, which was taking the claims process and automating it so it could be delivered in a completely different way. And it was his idea, and he hand-selected the team. They also had to use some consulting companies, so he kind of was the lead for those selecting the companies, giving them their tasks. He was in charge of managing the project, and he was very proud to report that his project produced exceptional results. So I took my notes, and it was pretty cool. I put them in my file. And about 60 days later, I was interviewing another woman. I should say that I interviewed so many people that I didn't really remember people from week to week. And so she was really interesting. She'd also worked at Aetna, and she was a senior project manager. She told me about this project revamping their claim structure. And she was part of the team that did this work, and she liaised with some external resources, and she helped, and she worked on this, and they did really well, and it was a great success. So that night, the night that I interviewed her, I was lying in bed, and at the time I had four young children, and my office was in my home, and something sounded familiar, and I thought, oh my God, it sounds like she must be working with this guy. So I pull up his resume. They had the same job. He was in charge of it. He led it. He chose it. He managed it. He produced exceptional results. And she was part of a team, and she helped. Yeah. And she was nice.
The word they.
Like right.
They.
Right, right. They.
Yeah.
And I picked up the phone, and I called this woman up the next morning and said, okay, you need, I would be happy to be your coach. I'm not doing this for self-serving reasons, but you need some help. Because you're totally, and probably somewhere between the two is the truth. Mm-hmm. But women need to own their accomplishments. And, you know, you mentioned this question about doing it humbly. Who cares about humility? This is not about, you are not going to be perceived as lacking humility. You have too much, most of you. You need to amp it up. And I think we can learn a lot from our younger coworkers, because I think the women coming up, I had three boys and a girl. The girl's 22. I'm noticing that she's really a little bit more bold than I was at that age. We can learn from the younger women that are coming through, and they've heard this message. We need to amp it up, and we need to speak boldly about what we do and confidently and not ever feel ashamed about it.
This is reminding me of something that we all can do. It's a two-person exercise. Years ago, I did it as in a workshop. Give someone a genuine compliment, and then see how they take it. And typically, women will go, "Oh, this whole thing," or "That's not. Oh, really? That's you cannot take the compliment." And so, the purpose of the exercise is just shut up and take it in. Essentially, it's really hard. It's really hard for women to just accept and then hopefully bask in a genuine compliment. So, any two people, try it out and see how it goes. And the goal is to get to accepting the compliment.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyway, sorry for that segue.
No, it's great.
Thank you. And now we go to Jai Vargas, who's a marketing and self-promotion guru, including branding and executive presence, also a LinkedIn expert. Again, go to Jai's impressive bio. So, Jai, what is one way you think we can be more effective when spending time and money on a networking event, the kind I'm hoping that are good ones, when building your own connections?
Mm-hmm. Well, I often get this a lot. Many people don't like to spend the time and the money and the energy going to networking events because, like you mentioned, it's sort of an ingenuine opportunity to just push each other's business cards, and a lot of people are there to just get from others. So raise your hand, actually, if you hate networking. Yeah, a lot of us. So what I like to call it is networking from your couch. I do tons of networking, but online, on LinkedIn specifically. So what I like to do, for example, before I invest time, money, or energy on attending a networking event, I see if the guest list is actually available to you online. I also check to see who the panelists are and who's organizing that event. So what I do is I connect with those individuals, all of them, on LinkedIn first. So you start developing the relationship and the conversation before you actually decide to go to that event. And then if you say, okay, this looks like it's going to be a fruitful event, I'm interested in attending, but I'm particularly interested in meeting one person. So start that networking and that relationship and that conversation before attending. And then once you get there, you know that your sole goal is to meet that one person so that they can then see you and say, perfect, we've already developed a relationship. I'm here to just put a face to the name. I'd love to take you out for coffee. Or if it's too much to ask, can we just set up a video call? Video calls are a fantastic way to network with anyone. Right, because a lot of the times we're trying to network with individuals who are pretty busy or at other organizations and they can't take time off for even a cup of coffee. So video calls are a really great way to sort of get that person for 15 or even 20 minutes of their time. So I love to call it networking from your couch, making sure that you start adding all of those people to your LinkedIn immediately, and whether you're looking for a job or you're looking to just position yourself in that industry, you can start to do it with those people automatically. So one way that you can do that is going into the app for our conference here today and looking up. Maybe you want to work at Converse. There's 60 people from Converse here today, right? And making sure that you connect. Look at their cool sneakers. It says, love the process, right? And going to their booth and saying, hey, I'm not sure if we met at the Massachusetts Women's Conference, but I passed by the booth. I heard her speak at the self-promotion workshop. I'd love to connect, and here's my resume. what kind of opportunities are available. I do PR, communications, marketing. And so setting yourself apart than just hoping that you might meet someone, right? And so making sure you approach Converse strategically, like they're all right here. Raise your hand if you work at Converse. Yes! So if you want to work at Converse, go into the Mass Women's app, look up all these people, go by the booth, and then give them your resume right through LinkedIn, and be ruthless about it. You know, even if they don't reply to you, at least you tried, right? And maybe they don't check LinkedIn all the time, but maybe 6 months from now, they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I saw your message. Yes, send me your resume. Apologize. And then you're connected for the future. So I love networking from my computer, from my couch, not necessarily in the cold.
It's funny you say that. I talk about networking behind the screen because I do all of my connecting behind the screen. So same idea, sometimes on the couch.
In pajamas.
Yes, exactly.
So as we're all now seeing, you're known as the LinkedIn ninja. And coming to a theme that we're touching on here, how are some ways you think people can self-promote online without looking overly boastful? I don't think it's a big problem for this group, but let's see what you say.
Yeah, so I see this a lot. A lot of people think that LinkedIn is somewhat like Instagram, where you have to be like, hey, look at me. I'm at this really cool conference with amazing people. For me, I think self-promotion online really structures around delivering value. So, for example, if you're going to post about being at this conference, you want to post about the particular workshop that you attended, the people that you met from Converse. What are the top three things? I know. I should get a job at Converse. I own a lot of them.
It would be a lot more comfortable.
I know. A lot more comfortable than this. I'm going to throw on my sneakers afterwards. But making sure that when you post on LinkedIn, you're delivering value and you're not like just boasting about yourself. So you're like, hey, today I'm in Boston attending the Women's Conference of Massachusetts. I learned these three things about being a self-promotion pioneer. I also met these four people, right? If you'd like to know when their next conference is, here's the website. And then you add the hashtags, right? And so making sure that you're actually delivering value to the person who's reading this post and they don't see it as like, oh, look, Maria's like at another conference. Lucky her. Big hooray. But she's giving you something so that you're like, oh, I didn't know that about self-promotion and delivering value and connecting with someone when you don't have the time to take off to come to a cool conference like this one. So, you know, just make sure that you're paying attention to how you're delivering value to someone who can't be here. And then they're just going to start gravitating more towards you because you're like sharing content that they actually want to listen to and not just boasting about what cool spaces you're able to be in because your job gave you a day off.
I think you're leading into a related question, which is how you can become an expert in your field.
Yes.
So you opened the door there. Let's hear a little bit more about that.
So I talk to people about being a subject matter expert. And we all have something that we're good at, maybe even two or three things. A lot of us are multidimensional. So I always talk to people about having four core pillars that you're consistently posting about on LinkedIn. So maybe you speak about marketing, communications, PR, or poli-sci, or fintech, or women in the workplace, or policy change. Make sure you know what your four core pillars are, and every single time you post on LinkedIn, you're consistently posting about those four core things. And so when someone's looking for someone to talk about women in fintech, they always think about you. You are always top of mind because you're always consistently posting about the same four core things. You know, the same thing is true when you post an article on LinkedIn. So I teach people every Monday morning, if you want to be the subject matter expert on fintech or women in marketing or communications or women policy change,
literally Google women in fintech, and whatever recent article just came out in the New York Times, post that on your LinkedIn, and then write your opinion and tag other people that you know have a voice or an opinion or an interest on these topics. And then that's where engagement comes into play. And then other people will then start seeing you as that subject matter expert. And they're like, wow, she must know a lot about fintech. Hey, we actually need someone to speak on that panel about fintech. Let's reach out to her. So making sure that you have four core things you're always going to be posting about, and they make sense.
This is straight from my content strategy workbook that I advise people on all the time.
I
so thank you for that.
I think it helps, like, you're authentic when you're doing that, right? So, like, I don't, even though I'm in a security division, I'm not an expert on cybersecurity. I know enough to get people interested in the conversation, but when I'm posting about a working mom, it's completely authentic, and that's where the engagement spikes on things,
yeah.
Right? So you're out there being true to who you are.
I love yeah. that. And also posing questions, too, right? When you post an article, you and also ask a question. Somebody just, so I do a lot of diversity and inclusion work for organizations, and someone just sent me an article about the differences between intersectionality. And I was like, wow, I speak a lot about this, but I've never heard her say it in this way or her opinion. And so I posted it, and I was like, I don't know, you tell me what you think, because I never looked at it this way. And so just being authentic and vulnerable, people will say, oh, I read this. I learned something new. I had no idea either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would add that I've been on LinkedIn for many years, and you may have noticed yourself that recently they've kind of upticked their editorial efforts in terms of they have a big editorial staff. They're looking for thought leaders. They're also posting a lot more and getting a lot more commenting going. They're very interested in this, of course, to grow their business, and they're building up groups. There's thousands of groups, but they're building up sort of the importance of that because LinkedIn is not just a sort of professional development tool separate from life, right? Separate from the world, even though it's kept very close to its original roots in one way, which is good. It's not a endless stream of all of our news and information about everything. It is still very professionally oriented, which is great. And as they want to expand that world, there's a lot more opportunity for commenting, for posting, for things being reposted, LinkedIn editors watching what people are doing and what the engagement is like. So I think that's really great advice. Are we ready for some questions? There are mics, three mics across the room if people want to.
Yeah, thank you. So we're going to open the session up for questions now. I have to say we did not plant Di. thank you. And in the spirit of self-promotion, if she sparked some interest, we do have a talent acquisition specialist.
Oh, look at that. Send them your resume.
So we have two mics. Please form a line between, or actually it looks like there's three, a line between those, and I'll alternate. But I'm going to kick it off with a first question for all of our panelists. So if you wanted to have everybody in this room leave with one takeaway today about networking and self-promotion, what would it be?
So mine would be, I think you have to build your brand. You're responsible for that. I don't think you can rely on your boss to build your brand. They can help you along the way, but don't let other people define what you're known for. You're the one responsible for that.
I would add to that, consider the language that you're using to present your brand to the world, and the word just should never be left leaving your lips. It happens way too much. You're allowed one thank you and no I'm sorrys, except for grave offenses. And those are three things that women do a lot. I hear it because I interview people all the time. I never hear it from men. They never say, I just want to talk, I just did this. They never say thank you 100 times in an interview, and they never say I'm sorry more than once. Actually, they don't ever say I'm sorry. Yeah, but good for them.
I wanted to add, a lot of people mention to me all the time, well, Jai, I hate social media. It's just another platform that I need to get on, but I know it's important. If you don't like social media or you don't have the time or the energy to work on your LinkedIn, just get somebody that's really good at it to help you with it. So you can outsource it, right? You can go to your local college. There's kids studying social media now, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it is. Yeah.
And so you can just pay them 15 or 20 bucks an hour, a couple of hours a week, and say, here's the strategy, here's the people I need you to connect with, and here's the message I want you to send out. So just outsource whatever you don't like to do. I do it all the time.
Thank you.
I think my one piece of advice does use the word just. I have a sticker I made as a little bit of swag for the book that says, it's just coffee. And I have those. If anybody wants them, I'm happy to give them out. They'll be down in the bookstore, too. But the reason it's just coffee is people feel like, I'm not ready to have a meeting. I can't take that introduction, women typically say, until I've done all my homework, which involves way more than is necessary. So I say to people, I just want to introduce you to somebody who I think you'll like. You know, you two have a lot in common. Or this is someone who would love to talk to you about whatever your question is. It's just coffee. You're not meeting with a hiring manager. You're not meeting with a CEO. Just have coffee with this person, and you never know what will come from it. So I've got the sticker that says just.
It's okay. That just do it. Oh, that's my point. That's Nike. That they own you. There we go. We're back at Converse. Full circle.
Okay, so we'll start on the far left, and then we'll just work our way down.
Hi, everyone. My name is Heidi. Thank you so much for this panel. I got a lot out of all of your insights, so I appreciate it. So I actually started a networking group in Boston called Massachusetts Marketing Mentors, and it's for women in marketing because I felt like networking was so transactional, and I used to hate it myself. Mm-hmm. And I started my own marketing consultancy, and since then I've realized the power of real authentic relationships. And I come across a lot of women who are shy or introverted in our group. I find the discussion based format really helps them, you know, small groups of 10 to 15. But my question is for each of you, what tips do you have for people who are specifically shy or introverted, who maybe typically shy away from that in-person communication, and how would you help them with networking and also increasing their executive presence within their organization?
That's Karen's bailiwick right there, right?
Heidi.
So I do talk a lot in my book about...
The networking group is Massachusetts Marketing Mentors, and I guess I'm doing self-promotion. So there you go. Thank you, everyone.
I do talk a lot in my book about introverts, and in fact, introverts have some superpowers when it comes to making connections. Introverts don't like to talk first. We like to ask other people questions to get them talking in order to gauge our comfort level and how we're going to appear to them. So that is actually a superpower because it means you're listening. And you're really not listening, genuinely listening, not just waiting your turn to talk.
Yeah.
And so that's a superpower for introverts. Also, the fact that most connecting is most effective is all one-to-one is really, I think, helpful to people to realize it's just going to be a conversation with the two of us. There I am with just again. And so I would say, and to take it at your own speed. Don't feel like I have to go meet everybody. I have to book up all my time with meetings and dates. No, a lot is done online. A lot is done virtually. And it's all one-to-one. So I would encourage introverts and shy people who are not necessarily the same to just think about, you know, breaking down to, I'd like to talk to this person about this just in a quiet place. Whatever that is, and it could just be by email even, is fine.
I just like to add that I think it's beholden on all of us, especially those of us who are extroverted, to help. Yeah. And, you know, in my prior career when I was working in flexible work, I found that the male executives, even though I didn't really get it, they were open to it, and I found that often if I was getting a challenge, it was from a senior-level woman. And I think that when, you know, scarcity breeds competition, so we know that there are fewer jobs at the C-suite level for women. And so the higher up we go, the more we kind of just close ranks around ourselves and don't invite others in. But I think that it's beholden on us to help each other. So if we're in a social situation, and if I'm really comfortable in one, and I know Karen maybe isn't, to bring her in.
Yeah.
And benefit from her, because I'm a talker. I mean, I really work hard at listening, but I do love to talk. And benefit from her good sense, good skills for listening. So just help each other. That'd be my little add-on there.
All right. Ooh, take you in the middle, please.
Hi, my name is Floor, and I prefer online networking because I'm an introvert, and I don't love to go into networking events. And recently, I found myself having to do a lot of networking. I started several months ago because I was going to be doing a study for a master's program, and I needed to get a lot of participants for my survey. And I just found it really, really difficult getting kind of follow-up, getting responses from people in general, like when I tried to initiate a connection. So back, you know, months ago, for example, I wanted to connect with this particular person that was new to our company, and she was a C-suite executive, and I thought she was great, and I just wanted to get to know her first, before anything else. And I sent a LinkedIn message, and I introduced myself, and I titled it Introduction, and I just gave a few little tidbits of who I am and how we're connected. But I never got a response back, and that happened several times, and I guess I'm just asking, how do you stay motivated and not discouraged from continuing to pursue connections, and should you follow up, if and how long would you wait?
I think that's you.
Yeah, it's a challenge. A lot of people don't check their LinkedIn messages, number one. So I get a lot of replies back from people months later saying, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. I just saw your message. I'm like, this was a year ago. My goodness. Why aren't you looking at your messages? I'd say don't give up. It's a numbers game. So you should be sending out like 50 of those a week. And if she works in the same company as you, literally go find her at her desk. Yeah. And just write her an email even and say, hey, we work at the same company, or would you like to have some coffee?
Okay.
But yeah, were you in the same building as her?
Yeah, we are in the same building. We're always stuck to our desks, but you're right. I should probably just go. I just find it a lot easier to do it behind a screen because it's just safer, I think.
You could even you could lead with that. Like, I have people that, you know, I'm uncomfortable, this isn't my thing, but I really want to talk to you.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
And I think that puts the other person's defenses down right away.
Okay.
Right? Like,
make us,
give that person.
Doesn't make us seem a little weird? No?
No.
Okay, thank you.
No, if you kept doing it every day, it would be weird.
One other thing, though, is that, just so you understand, like, some of us on this stage get inundated with, I'm overwhelmed at the number of emails and messages I get. Nobody calls me anymore. When I get a phone call, I listen, I pick it up, I'm shocked, it's novel. So I tell my personal coaching clients, pick up the phone. There's something very disarming about hearing a human voice, especially nowadays where, how many of you get many phone calls anymore? It used to be that you'd get a few emails. Just your mom. But I think sometimes you have to try, even though you said you're more comfortable on the digital platform, sometimes you just have to make yourself uncomfortable and try a different way.
Or send her like an internal Slack message. Yeah.
Over in the right.
Hi. Thank you so much. I've gotten so much from this. I believe Katie mentioned earlier about women who've taken breaks from work and how they might leverage some of the experiences that they've done, such as, you know, flipping houses, to negotiate a position. I have been working in restaurants for over 10 years, and I'm entering the workforce. And I find it really difficult to utilize that experience on my resume when I'm applying for jobs in academia or higher education. I'm just curious if you had any strategies on how you can put that into language.
I think you might have been referencing me. I'm Susan. So a couple of things. First of all, you need to make sure that the language that you're using is understood by someone who doesn't work in a restaurant. It has to be very focused on skills, experiences, and results. So everybody, and this goes for everybody, your resume can't just be a lot of language about how nice you are and nice things that you did and you were helpful. Those words actually should never be in your resume. But they really do have to focus on skills. But I want to back that up by saying, are you applying for jobs online? Is that how you're spreading your resume around?
Yes.
Okay. So you realize, and you should all realize, that the national statistic for people who get a job by applying online is 30%. If you have anything short of a completely conventional resume, which is a perfect fit for the job for which you're applying, you have about a 10% chance. So your resume is unconventional right away because you've worked in restaurant and you're pivoting. If you are pivoting even within your company, but into a different department, your resume is not going to get through the algorithms. It won't even get through the 27-year-old recruiter who's been given a list of keywords that he's looking at, right? So you have to network. So this is a really good workshop for you to be in. So here's a tip that you can all walk away from. If you're looking for a job and you see a job posting, you think, I want this job, don't apply online before going to LinkedIn and finding who you know who might know someone who's there. I'll give you an example. I have a client in Connecticut who's a physicist who just PhD, just decided he doesn't want to do physics anymore. So, but he's a physicist. They're like, who hires physicists except like NASA, right? But he's really, really good at coding even though he doesn't have a degree in coding. So he found a job here in Boston that he wanted to apply for. I said, well, wait a second. Check your network. So he checked his network, and he didn't have anybody. I checked mine, and a friend of mine in North Carolina is friends with the HR director at this company. So I called her up. I said, can I call this guy Brian? She said, absolutely. Can I use your name? Great. So I email Brian. I mention Karen's name. I tell him what I'm doing. I say, I've got this great guy. He calls me, picks up the phone, and says, absolutely, I'll make sure he gets looked at. He has a job offer. He never, ever would have gotten an interview if he hadn't gone through that exercise and been lucky enough to be connected with me, who was connected with another Karen. Mm-hmm. So just make sure that you can keep really busy doing things that aren't producing results. And applying online is not going to produce a result. So it's not so much your resume that's failing, I think, as long as you're following those early formulas that I mentioned. It's the modality that you're using to get it out there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
We'll go back to the left, please.
Fantastic. So thanks. This has been great. Networking is obviously very important, and it's something that's helped me in my career. But as I've tried to coach women on networking, it's like I'm not hitting the right notes. So what can men do to be part of the solution and help women along the path of networking, particularly without sounding tone deaf?
I'll let Kate answer that, but I think the best example is what your boss did.
Yeah, it stopped me in the middle of the
exactly.
resume. Yeah, I think we have, the company I work for is very big on diversity and inclusion, so there's a lot of focus on females. So we do a lot of, but it really goes for anybody, a lot of roundtables, a lot of career day type things where we're talking about what we're talking here, and we use those examples. And I think you just have to hone it to the group. So going back to the introvert, extrovert thing, if I know someone's uncomfortable in a round table, but I can tell they have a point of view, I go up to them afterwards, right? Because I learn from every person that's asking me something. But I think it's on all of us. It's just, if you see someone, stop them dead in their tracks like he did to me, but don't do it in public. Don't do it around other people, right? Because that just embarrasses them. But if you pull them aside later and say, you know, I saw you could do this, or I think you have a thought here, you build that trust. It comes back to trust to me.
Another thing you can help, because you're a coach, it sounds like.
Yes.
I think another thing you can do, and again, this works especially well for introverts, is help them write a script. Mm. I will actually write scripts with clients and have them practice, because it's a learned skill. For some of us, it's very natural. For others, it's not. But it can certainly be learned. And that would be a great way that you could help someone in a really tangible way.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
We have time for one more question, so we'll take it from you in the middle.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Danielle Harrison. I'm from Bristol-Myers Squibb. And Jaya, I have a question for you about your four pillars. I find myself, when I'm proposing myself on LinkedIn or really anywhere, I have my hands in so many different honeypots. Yeah. And my biggest question that I always get caught up on, and I just get stuck there, is which pillars are the most valuable for me to sell? So how do you identify your most valuable pillars?
That's a great question. So it depends on what you're trying to move into or what you're trying to focus on, as well as who your community is made up of. And so I have a lot of people look at their statistics and their engagement as well. So when you post a particular article, are people reacting to it? Are they liking it? Are they commenting it? So do a test run. And for me, I post a lot about women's empowerment, women-owned businesses, diversity and inclusion, and also career advancement. And I always try to test and see how many of those get the actual engagements, numbers that I like to see. So make sure that your pillars also make sense to you. I see a lot of people posting about selling cupcakes, and then they're selling sneakers, and then they're running a marathon. And so we're all multidimensional. That could be all of us, but make sure that they all are tied to one common theme, whether it's women, whether it's pharmaceutical marketing, communications, your industry as a whole, but make sure that you start off with perhaps one, go really deep, be that subject matter expert, and then you can start to expand and people can say, oh, she also does this or is involved in this. I like that.
So you're really saying up to four. You don't have to have four.
Yeah, so you can start with one. What are some of the things that you would post about?
So I personally, career advancement is very important. I've been involved in that for a lot of different individuals, but then I also am a subject matter expert on perfusion for cell culture. I'm not sure how many people are familiar with that here. So those would be the two that I think I would focus on, but are they related enough? One's very technical and one's very
broad,
right?
What do you love? Yeah, I mean, really should all be driven by what your passion is.
Yeah. Right.
Which is it?
It's hard to decide. Is that something I love both. I love the science. I love the perfusion. But I'm so passionate about developing others' careers and advancing careers and developing individuals.
Those are easy to connect.
Okay.
Yeah, and maybe write an article about why you've chosen those two things.
Oh.
So physically on LinkedIn, instead of writing an update, start drafting an article. And you can add pictures and quote other articles, tag people as well so that they can chime in on the conversation. Mm-hmm. And then you're explaining to people why you like those two things, and then we get it.
Okay.
It's like writing the story about why those two things are important to you. Mm-hmm. So that if we can't see it automatically, the story explains it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Please join me in thanking all of our panelists for their insights today. Yeah.